Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. The Gemara here asks a fundamental question, which is, Ibailuhu, Eretz Yisrael Shvatim Iflog, O Dimele Karkaf Gavre Iflog. Was the land of Israel divided up amongst the Shvatim, or was it divided up amongst the numbers of individuals? The difference being whether each Shevet got an equal portion in the land, just a question of which portion they got in the land, but they were all given the same portion. Or was it based on the population of that Shevet? The larger the Shevet, the more land that they got. The smaller the Shevet, the less land they got. The reason the question really comes up is because of the way that the Parshia of the Nachalot is worded in Parshat Pinchas, which is, Ve'yedaber Hashem al Moshe l'emor, Le'ela techalek aretz ben nachala b'mispar shemot, L'rav tarbe nachalato, V'lama'at tamit nachalato. So it seems to be from there that the more populous that you are, the larger your inheritance, and those that are less populous, they tamit nachlato, they have a smaller portion, ish lefi pikudav yutan nachlato. According to the enumeration of each shevet, it seems, yutan nachlato, they will get a nachla. Then the pasuk says, ach bigorah yechalek et aretz, lishmot matot avutan inchalu. There is a goral, there will be a lottery by which you'll divide up the land, and that will divide up amongst the forefathers. Al pi goral, techalek nachlato, be the goral, you will divide it up, ben rav lima'at, whether they are big or they're small. Now, the simplest way maybe to read this and have it all make sense is to say that that last line of ben rav lima'at is that the goral will be determinant, ben rav lima'at, giving those that need more, more, and those that are less, less. On the other hand, the way that Chazal read it, and most of the Rishonim read this, is al pi goral t'chalek nachlato is ben rav lima'at. Whether you're big or whether you're small, the goral will divide it up evenly. And so that there is no distinction for size. And so that's really the nature of the Gemara's question, which is, does size matter or does size not matter? If it is that size matters, then each person would have gotten the same piece of land in Eretz Yisrael, because you would determine by the number of people in the Shevet, you would give them that tract of land, and then each person would have gotten that same parcel of land. On the other hand, if you say that the Shvatim were divided up evenly, then the Shvatim with larger populations will end up, their people have smaller tracts of land, because they have to subdivide the portion that they got into a larger populace, because they got the same size as someone with a less population. And so they would get smaller parcels of land versus those with smaller populations that would get larger parcels of land. And that's the nature of the Gemara's question over here. Was Eretz Yisrael Nitpaleg l'shvatim, was it divided up amongst the shvatim? Or maybe it was distributed based on the number of people. Tashma, ben rav d'ma'at. The Gemara brings the pasuk that we just read, which is ben rav d'ma'at, means that there is no distinction in size. Size is irrelevant in these matters. So if that's the case, we have definitive proof that it was divided up amongst the shvatim. Ve'od tanya. And then we bring a braita on top of that as proof. And as the Rashbam notes, even though we don't usually bring a braita to support a pasuk, if you have a pasuk, what do you need a braita? So he says, the Rashbam, the Ika, the Midrash, Nami Hai Ben Rav Damat, Kedel Kaman Bebraita. So you could interpret the Ben Rav Damat in a different manner. And since there are alternative ways to interpret it, including the way that we mentioned before, which would make it not that it's equal, therefore it brings the braita to bolster the understanding of what Ben Rav Damat is. So, O Tanya, Tida, Eretz Yisrael, Shetit Chalek, L'Shosha Asar, Shvatim. In the future, Eretz Yisrael will be divided amongst the 13 Shvatim, Shebitchila. In the beginning, meaning the original Chaluka, Lo Nitchaluka, L'Shnei Masar Shvatim. It was only subdivided amongst the 12 Shvatim. So, first of all, with regards to the Chaluka of by 12 Shvatim, there are 13 Shvatim, because Shevet Yosef was divided in half. It was Menashe and Ephraim. But Shevet Levi did not take a Nachla in Eretz Yisrael. So that means that there are 12 Shvatim dividing up the land of Israel. Now, whether this is in theory there were 12 that were dividing it up, because remember that Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe took their Yerusha on the Eiver HaYarden. So whether the Brita here is including them in this distribution, or the Brita is saying what would have been had Reuben and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe not taken their portion in the Eiver HaYarden, would have been that it was divided up amongst the 12 Shvatim. So that's true in the original Chaluka, but in the Chaluka L'Atid Lavo, it'll be 13 Shvatim, which the Brita will have to clarify as to why there are 13 Shvatim that are dividing it up. Now, as the Rashbam points out, you have some sort of difficulty over here, which is that if you say that the 13 Shvatim are because Levi will get a Nachala, because that's what it says in the last parak in Yechezkel with regards to the division of Yerushalayim, it mentions Levi is getting a Chelek there. So that would mean that if Levi's getting it, that's how you get to the 13. On the other hand, you have something on the other side, which is that instead of it saying Menashe and Ephraim, over there it says Yosef, and it recombines them into a single Shevet. So the Rashbam says, even if you add in Levi, you lose Menashe and Ephraim, and you still don't get to the number 13. That's the way that the Rashbam at least formulates the issue of these 13 Shvatim. There are those that disagree with the Rashbam, because if you look in the Perek in Yechezkel, even though at one point it mentions that in the Sha'arim of Yerushalayim, it's Shar Yosef Echad, Shar Yibenyamin Echad, Shar Dan Echad, so even though it mentions Yosef as a singular entity over there, in the remainder of the Perek, that's not the case. The remainder of the Perek does mention Menashe and Ephraim as separate entities, and therefore you can't make this claim that Yosef is only going to get one Chelek, both for Menashe and Ephraim. And Shevet Levi, they claim, is not like the Rashbam says, because it mentions Levi as taking one of the She'arim, that Levi actually got a Nachala, but simply that Levi will be allocated a piece in Yerushalayim or the Sha'arim of Yerushalayim, similar to what happened when they entered the land the first time, that Levi gets an achuzah in the city, not literally an achuzah in the sense of that's going to be their inheritance, because they don't really get a nachla on the land, but rather that'll be a designated place for where the Levi'im will live. Given that, you either have to say that the problem of the 13, which we'll see the Braita will take up in a second, derives from the fact that Yosef now is mentioned instead of Menashe and Ephraim, and Levi is getting, but that still only gets you to 12. Or, if it is that Menashe and Ephraim are still separate, but Levi is only getting it as an allocation like he gets in other places in the land, then who is the 13th member or Shevet that we're speaking about here? That's number one. Number two is, Lo nitchalka ela bekesef. The property is only divided up by kesef, shnever ben rav de ma'at. Between those that were more or less, there is no differentiation. So, it can't be that there is no differentiation, because by definition, the parcels of land are of a different nature. So if they're all equal in size, that does not mean that they are equal in value. And therefore, what we're thinking now, according to the Rashbam, is that you had to make monetary compensation for that differential. If you got land that was of lower quality, then you would get compensation from the other Shvatim that got higher quality land. And so that's how they would reallocate, in a sense, the fairness of the distribution by having compensation be made to equalize the differential in quality between the sections of land that were given to the different Shvatim. Amar of Yehuda, as the Rashbam points out over here, it doesn't say Rabbi Yehuda Omer, which would be the standard language for Rabbi Yehuda if he was arguing on the Tanna Kamma, but rather Amar Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rashbam, is that he's explaining that which was said by the Tanna Kamma. Sa'ab Yehuda Sheveh Chamesh Sa'im Begalil. So at this point we think, or we're understanding, is that he is explaining what it means, that one Sa'ah in Yehuda is of higher quality or a better location, to the point where its value is equivalent to five Sa'in in the Galil. So given that difference between them, of course, you have to make some sort of adjustment for the fairness of the distribution. Because if someone got the same tract of land up in the Galil as they got in Yerushalayim or in Yehuda, it would clearly be unfair, because the value of that in Yehuda would be five times the value of that in the Galil. And so Yehuda is simply giving an explanation for what the Tanna Kamma is pointing out, which is that there are these differentials in value that need to be taken care of. The Braita says it was only divided up by the Goral. Shneamar, Pasuk in Pinchas says, Ach Begoral. V'lo nitchalka ela be'urim v'tumim. On the other hand, it was also only divided up by the Be'urim v'tumim. Shneamar, Al pi ha-goral. Because it says, by the word of the Goral. Obviously, the Goral does not speak. So Al pi ha-goral, seemingly they're reading as Al pi, means Al pi ha-shem, Be'goral. And Al-Pi Hashem is represented by the Urim V'tumim. HaKetzad, how do you reconcile between the fact that it says Al-Pi HaGoral and it says Al-Pi Hashem? It's similar to what Chazal do with regards to the Chatzotzrot. When it says by the Chatzotzrot, it says that when you blow the Chatzotzrot, that will tell the people that it's time to move. But it also says Al-Pi Moshe and also says Al-Pi Hashem. So there, Chazal put them all together and say you need all three. You need Al Pi Moshe, you need Al Pi Hashem, and you need on the Pi of the Chatzutrot in order for them to move. And similarly over here, where it says you need Al Pi, we're interpreting as Al Pi Hashem, and the Goral, how do you reconcile between them? Ketzat, Elazar Milubash Urim Vitumim. Elazar is wearing the Urim Vitumim, Yoshua Bechol Yisrael Umdim Lefanav, and Yoshua and the whole arm are standing there. Bekalpi Shel Shvatim, Bekalpi Shel Tchumim Menachim Lefanav. And you have the lottery box that is full of the Shvatim, the names of all the Shvatim. Then you have a lottery box next to it that has the particular allocations of the land in Israel. And then they used to ask the Urim Vitumim what should be. Zvulun Ole. When they ask the Urim Vitumim, it says Zvulun will get this portion, and Tchum Akko Ole Imo. And together with Zvulun will be matched up with the area of Akko, the Bali Tosafot. Note that it can't be really Akko Mamash, because Akko was mentioned in Shoftim as belonging to the area of Asher. So he says it doesn't literally mean Akko, but something to the side or south of Akko. We have to come up with some solution to that. Taraf Bakalpi. After they got this through the Ruach HaKodesh and the Urim V'Tumim, they used to put their hand into the lottery box, Shel Shvatim, V'Ala B'Yedo Zvulun. And sure enough, when he pulled it out, it was Zvulun. Taraf Bakalpi Shel Tchumim, and then he stuck his hand into the lottery box of the Tchum. And then out would come the Tchum of Akko. So here is a way to uphold the integrity of both the lottery and the Ruach Hashem. So nobody can complain that the whole system was fixed, or somehow that they were cheated out of their chalukah in the Aretz, because the way it worked was they would ask the Urim V'Tumim, and it would predict that which would come out randomly from the lottery boxes. Then they would go ahead and pick out of the lottery boxes randomly, and sure enough, those pieces would come out. So each one verified the other. So the Urim V'Tumim verifies that the lottery is a valid lottery of just a random nature being picked out. And the lottery also verifies that's what's been said in the name of Hashem. So using both methods, it demonstrates to the people that this is the honest division of the land. And there you have Al Pi Hashem through the Urim V'Tumim, and Al Pi HaGoral that you're picking out of the Goral. Then he moves on to the next one. Next one to be picked out will be Naphtali. Utchum Ginosar Ole Imo. And the area around the Kinneret will belong to him. Taraf Bakalpi Shel Shvatim. Then he stuck his hand into the lottery box of the Shvatim. V'ala B'yado Naphtali. And how did he pick out Naphtali? Taraf Bakalpi Shel Tchumin. Then he put his hand into the allocation of the properties. V'ala B'yado Tchum Kinosar. And then the area around the Kinneret came with that. Chein Kol Shevet V'Shevet. And so it was true as they went through Shevet by Shevet. The Rashbam points out, why did they pick Zvulun and Naphtali as being representative of the Shvatim? Normally, if you start, you would start with Reuven, Shimon, you'd go in order of the Shvatim. So the Rashbam says, no, they picked Zvulun and Naphtali to show you that it had nothing to do with age order. It had to do with whatever Hashem said or whatever was picked out of the lottery. So in order to indicate that randomness, it just picks two of the Shvatim in the middle. It picks Zvulun and Naphtali. That were two Shvatim, nothing particular about them, just that they're not in order in any way. And since that's the case, you can see the randomness of the Goral and upholding the integrity of this whole process. Veloke chalukah shel olam hazeh, chalukah shel olam haba. The division of the properties in olam hazeh is different than the properties of the olam haba. Olam hazeh adam yesh lo sadeh lavan, yesh lo sadeh lavan. Person has a grain field, ein lo sadeh pardes. Then he doesn't have an orchard, or he doesn't have a vineyard. Sadeh pardes, if he has a vineyard or an orchard, ein lo sadeh lavan. Then he doesn't have a grain field. Olam haba, ein lecha kol echad ve'echad shein lo bahar u'bishvala u'be'emek. Atid lavo, everybody's going to get a distribution in every area or every topography or every type of land, and therefore it all be equal. Tosfot asks from the Gemara in Baba Kama, which says that every Shevet got a section in the Har and the Shvila on the Negev, so what's different about the Atid level? So either you have to say that that's true on a Shevet level in Baba Kama, but here it's going to be true at the individual level, or in the original Chalukah, everybody got a section in these different areas of Eretz Yisrael, but the sizes were not necessarily equal. Atid Avo, the distribution of those different areas or topographies of Eretz Yisrael will be exactly of the same size. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says in Yechezkel, Sha'ar Ruvein Echad, Sha'ar Yehuda Echad, Sha'ar Levi Echad, that was the Levi that we mentioned above before by the Rashbam, Kodesh Baruch Hu Mechalek Lehem Ba'atzmo, and Kodesh Baruch Hu himself distributed to them, Shenemar, Ve'elo Machlokotam, this is their divisions, Dum Hashem, that comes from the word of Hashem. This is the end of the Braita. Now, how we learn out that you get an equal portion, the way that the Rashbam learns it out is because it says Echad by each of them. By each of the Shvatim, it says Echad, so that draws a parallel between each of the Shvatim's Yerusha, because it says Echad by each one of them, implying that they all are of a similar ilk or a similar type. Others want to suggest that it derives from the fact that all the Shvatim are mentioned there getting a chelek in Yerushalayim. So the fact that every Shevet got a chelek in Yerushalayim is indicative of the fact that there'll be an equal distribution to everyone or to every Shevet, and that's why every Shevet needs a chelek in Yerushalayim or an equal portion inside of Yerushalayim. Others suggest, unlike the Rashbam who says the word Echad, Echad, Echad by each of them, implies equality, others just simply say that the extraneous nature of the word Echad is what drives the limud over here. So that is the end of the Braita, and now the Gemara concludes, why was this Braita brought? K'tani mihat, the Braita has written in it, shebitchila lo nitchalka l'shneimasar shvatim. In the beginning, the distribution of the land was to the 12 shvatim. Shvamina, the shvatim iflug shvamina. From the Braita you can see that the division of the land and its origins was done to the shvatim, and not to individuals, and that would be a conclusion to our question, was the land divided by to the Shvatim, or was it divided to individuals? The answer is, it was divided amongst the Shvatim. Many of the Rishonim point out that there was then a secondary division. Once the Shvatim had gotten their chelek, then there was another goral or system for dividing it up amongst the Shevet itself. There, Rav and Ma'at made a difference. There, your size of your family would make a difference within the Shevet, because your portion within the Shevet would be governed by the number of people or members in your family who are entitled to Yerusha. And so that's where this difference in population or difference in size plays out. That's in the intra-Shevet divisions, not in the inter-Shevet divisions. Now, Amar Mar, so the Gemara now goes back to dissect the Braita. Atida Eretz Yisrael shetitchalek l'shosha asar shvatim. So the 13 Shvatim, as we already pointed out, it's difficult to get the 13 Shvatim. Idach Taman. That's what the Gemara asks. I understand how you distribute the 12. I don't understand how you distribute the 13th. Amar Rav Chista l'Nasi. Chista says that the 13th portion goes to the Nasi. Dichtiv. Because it says there in that same perek in Yechezkel, in Pasuk Yuted, it says, Va'oved ha'ir, yavduhu mikol shiftei Yisrael. The one who is working for the city, running the city, then all Bnei Yisrael will provide for him or make themselves available for him. So the Nasi, who carries the burden of the people, and therefore he's considered to be working for the people, then Yavdu, then he will get or be granted Nachala from all the other Shvatim. So you see here that there is a 13th Shevet, in a sense, or a 13th distribution of the land that is given to the Nasi. The way the Rashbam interprets it is the Nasi is the Melech HaMashiach. The Melech HaMashiach will get that portion. Amar le Rav Papa Abaye, Ema Rungar Ba'alma. Who says that he's getting that as a Yerusha? Maybe he's just getting it as a Sakhir Yom or a worker, which is that he's granted the land to work on it, but he's not necessarily given it as a Nachala. And it's a gift in the sense that he gets the produce, he gets the output of the land, but it's not necessarily a gift that says that he gets a Nachala. It says, Lo Saka Datcha, doesn't make so much sense to say that, because in Pasuk Chaf Aleph over there it says, Dichtiv, Vanotar Lanasi Mizeh Umizeh L'Trumat HaKodesh U'L'Chuzat HaYir. The remainder portion of it will go towards the Kodesh, which is for the Migdash, or the areas of the Migdash, V'L'Chuzat HaYir, the city itself. So here it makes it sound like he is on par with these other aspects or these other areas. That there's a space that will be given towards the Migdash. There will be a space that belongs to the rest of the city. And then it will be his Nachala. So you see that we're not speaking about simply a rental or lease on the property, but we're speaking about him being granted a full portion of Nachala. Now as to the size of his Nachala, it's not clear here whether he gets a portion that's equal to the other Shvatim, or simply that he just gets a Nachala. Doesn't mean that he gets it on equal footing with the other Shvatim. Just means that he does get some form of Nachala in this city. Alright, so now, the Gemara goes back and says, V'lo nitchalka elektafim. Again, it's like an Amar Mar going back into the Braita, which says that it was only divided up based on the monetary value. So, the Gemara concluded before that the property was divided amongst the Shvatim. And so the way that they divided it up with the Urim V'Tumim and with the Goral was that everybody got their portion of property, and then they assessed the value of those properties, and they adjusted the values based on the type of property that you got. And so then you would get compensation of some sort in order to rectify that situation. But in that case, it would still remain that all the portions or the areas of the property were exactly the same. You just had to make some form of compensation for the differential in quality and locations of the property. Although, if you look at Rashi in the Torah, on the Pasuk, L'Rav Tarbeh Nachlato, V'Lema'at Tamit Nachlato, Ish Lefi Pikudav Yitein Nachlato, Rashi over there says that they divided up the land into 12 parts, but the parts were actually matim to the size of the shevet, that the goral and the pi hashem and the urim v'tumim decided which lot went which with shevet. But that doesn't mean that the lots were all equal. According to Rashi al Torah, the lots were of different sizes. And what the urim v'tumim and the goral did was match up the shevet with the lot. And it would turn out that the shevet with the greatest population ended up with the largest parcel of land was given to the largest shevet. But that wasn't done up ahead of time. There were divisions of the land into different sizes, and then they were put in the lottery box, and the shvatim in the lottery box, but it would turn out that the biggest shevet would get the biggest tract of land. And then it would make sense, because both the urim v'tumim would predict that, and the goral would verify that and bring it out in that way. So now the Gemara goes back to understand Belonit Chalkalik Safim, who's only divided up based on the monetary value. Shinemar, because it says Ben Ra'av the Ma'at, no matter what your size was. Lamai, what are they adjusting for in value terms? Ilema Lishufra Visanyo is for better quality or better, more productive land versus that which is less productive or less appealing type of land. Atu Bishuftani Askinen? Are we dealing here with people who are irrational, that they are fools, that they would accept such a distribution? Why would anybody agree to take less productive property and then grant their other party the more productive property and say, yeah, just make compensation to me, just give me a cash differential in order to make up for that difference? First of all, it would be very hard to calculate. And besides that, what you are doing is permanently relegating your shevet to a poor quality land. Land is something that lasts forever. Kesef or money or compensation is something that is metalkaline, that can disappear and can be spent. Number two is the value differential between the lands is really the present value of all the future production of that land. If you're going to be there for thousands of years, then that present value is going to be a very large number because you're giving up that value for thousands of years. And how can you actually make compensation for that? So that's what the nature of the Gemara's question is. It doesn't make sense to divide it up equally in terms of the tracts of land and then try to adjust for the quality differentials. Ela lekrova v'rechoka. This is dealing with that which is proximate to Yerushalayim and that which is far away from Yerushalayim. So according to the Rashbam, what the Gemara just did was took a step forward and said, you're right. As far as the size or tracts of the land, they could not be of equal size and then have them compensate each other for the difference in quality, but rather the sizes of the tracts of land matched up the quality. And that's what was said by Rabbi Yehuda in the Braita, that a sa'a in Yehuda was equal to 5 sa'a in the Galil. So those people that were living in the Galil got property sizes or tracts of land that were 5 times the size of the property allocated around Yerushalayim. Not much different than today. You can go up north and get large tracts of property in the Golan, the Galil, versus if you take in Yerushalayim where you can get a very small postage stamp piece of land for the same price. So that's how the land was divided up according to the Rashbam. Now the Gemara says, well then what's the Ben Rav the Ma'at coming to teach you? It's coming to teach you there was compensation for one other differential in the value. Again, first differential is quality. The second differential is location, which is proximity to Yerushalayim. Being proximate to Yerushalayim has 2 benefits. The first benefit is you're closer to the Mikdash. So anything that involves Aliyah the Regel, bringing your Kurbanot, bringing your Bikurim, bringing things to the Mikdash, it's much easier if you live closer versus if you live further away. So that's number one. Number two is those people that live in the center of the country around Yerushalayim, they are not on the borders. The people who live out on the periphery are out on the borders and they're subject to the attacks, vagaries of the enemies on the other sides of those lines. And they bear the brunt of any battles or any difficulties that arise from the neighboring countries. So those two reasons make it that there is value or more value to the property in Yerushalayim than the property in the Galil and the Golan, even though we've already adjusted for quality by adjusting the size or tract of land. There's an additional differential that you need to deal with, and that's proximity to Yerushalayim. And so that's what it says here, that that was what they compensated for. That differential they paid compensation towards. That's the view of the Rashbam. And the Gemara says, Kitanae. This is similar to a Machloket Tanaim, which is Rabbi Elazar Omer, Biksafim Helu. They made up for the differential in value by compensating in cash. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Bikarka Elua. They divided it up, or they made people whole by redistributing the land or expanding the quantity or measurement of land to one party over the other party. So now, this, according to the Rashbam, again, the Braita has divided the issues in two. The first thing is that the quality of land was solved by giving larger tracts of poor quality land versus smaller tracts of high quality land. With regards to Krovan Rechoka from Yerushalayim, over there they made monetary compensation for that. The Machloket Tanaim between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua references to the Krovan Rechoka from Yerushalayim. And that means that the Braita that we just saw follows this Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. And that explains the two different levels, as well as why the Gemara brought a Machloket Tanaim over here, which is in our Braita, which says that you do that through monetary compensation, is subscribing to the position of Rabbi Eliezer. And that's what it means, Kitana'e, according to the Rashbam. On the other hand, the Rimigash and other Rishonim say that this machloki between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua not only revolves around the issue of Krovan Rechukam Yerushalayim, but also revolves around the issue of quality of land. And therefore the machloket over here between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua relates to both of those issues, whether we can use monetary compensation to solve both of those problems, or we can only use land to solve those differentials. But that means that both issues are still open, which is how you adjust for the quality of the land, and how do you adjust for the location of the land? And both of those will be governed by this machloke between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, where Rabbi Elazar will say, you make up the differential by monetary compensation. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you adjust the size of the properties to reflect those differences. So they believe, unlike the Rashbam, that the issue is true by both differentials, that they're solved either through monetary compensation or karka. As the Rashbam believes that quality was definitely solved by karka, that's divrei hakol. And the question is, rechoka and krova, was that solved by karka, was that solved by kesef? And then obviously, according to that Rimigash, you would have to read the question of the Gemara before of Ilema Leshufer Visanya, Ato Bishuftani Eskina, and slightly different, which is not like the Rashbam assumed that obviously the sizes or the parcels of a land already adjusted for that. So then the Rimigash sees the question as the following. Of course, they had to make up that differential in terms of quality of land. Whether that's kesef or karka, that's the machloket tanaim coming up. But even if you have equal quality of land, there's still another differential that needs to be dealt with, and that is distance. And that too is subject to the same machloket as how to compensate for that. Is that karka or is that cash? So the properties that were divided up by the goral, shenemar, ach bigoral. Because that's what the pasuk says. Tana, ach bigoral, yetzu Yoshua v'Kalev. The exception to that is Yoshua and Kalev, lamai. Ilema delo shakul klal. If you want to say that they didn't take any inheritance in Eretz Yisrael, hasha delav didu shakul didu mibayi. We already saw before, v'chayu min anashim ha'elu, that Kalev and Yoshua who lived out of all of the miraglim, and then they took not only their portion, but the portion of the other miraglim. So if they inherited other people's portions, you're going to say they didn't even get one of their own? It doesn't make any sense. Ela shelo natlu bigoral, ela api Hashem. That Yoshua and Kalev were not subject to the goral. They got their properties distributed to them directly by God. Yoshua dichtev al pi Hashem natnu lo et ha'ir asher sha'alet imnat serach. So it says that by the word of Hashem, they gave Yoshua the city which he asked for, which was Timnat Serach Behar Ephraim. It was from Shevet Ephraim, and he got his parcel of land in an area that he chose in Har Ephraim, Timnat Serach, and Hashem granted him that Yerusha as his portion in the land. Tiv Serach v'chtiv, so it has in Shoftim, Perek Bet, Pasuk Tet, versus what we just saw in Yoshua. There are a number of these types of situations where the stories that are written in Yoshua are repeated in some slight variation in Shoftim. This is one of those examples where Yoshua took his Nachalah, which is mentioned in Yoshua in Perek Yutet, Pasuk Mem Tet, and that is again mentioned in Shoftim. The difference between them is the name of the city, whether it's Timnat Serach or Timnat Cheres, and why do you have difference in the name? So Amar Rabbi Elazar, B'tchila Perutera Kecheres. In the beginning, its fruits are hard like earthenware. U'besov Perutera Masrichim. And in the end, the fruits rot. The way that the Rashbam explains it is that originally they don't have so much sweetness or quote-unquote fat in the fruits, and therefore they were hard. But later on, after Yeshua took possession of the property, the fruits of that land became much more juicy and flavorful, and that's why they rotted, because they had so much juice and flavor to them that if they were left around, they would end up rotting. But that's a positive statement, that the fruits turned out to be much sweeter or much better. After Yeshua took possession of that property, they changed from being like fruits of Cheres to fruits of Masrichim, that are juicy and fat. Or the other version of this is that in the beginning they used to rot, meaning that they were overly sweet, or they were too much, and they used to go bad. And then when Yeshua took off the land, they toned down their sweetness or their over-sweetness, and then they became really good fruits, like that of Cheres, where they had good utility to them. That's the way the Rashbam explains it. Others explain that this is the way the land was before Yeshua took possession, and that's the way it is after Yeshua took possession of it. But rather, after Yeshua took possession of the land, this is what happened to the fruits. The fruits would start out like Cheres, and then have Masrichim, or vice versa, start out Masrichim, and then end up like Cheres, which is that they went through this process because of the schult of Yeshua. So that's the proof to the fact that it was Al Pi Hashem, that Yeshua did not get his portion of the land through the Goral, but rather Al Pi Hashem. V'Kalev Dichtiv, V'Itnu LeKalev Et Chevron, Kasher Diber Moshe, that they gave Kalev the area of Chevron, like Moshe had stated, V'Yoresh Misham Et Shlosha Bnei Anak, and he chased out the giants from there, and that's how we know that Kalev was given the property Kasher Diber Moshe. So now that's found also in Shoftim, in Perek Aleph. Pasuk Chaf, although the Marsha does point out that there is an explicit Pasuk in Yeshua, Perek Tevav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, L'Kalev ben Yifune natan chelek betoch bnei Yehuda, al pi Hashem, lo Yeshua, Kiryat Arba v'yanak hi Hebron. So there it's even more explicit in Yeshua that it was given al pi Hashem. Maybe they just brought it from the Perek in Shoftim because they had just used Shoftim for the proof by Yoshua, so they also used it by Kalev. But again, it's a story that's repeated in Yoshua and Shoftim, and the one in Yoshua is more explicit that the land was given to him al pi Hashem. Mar says, could Kalev ben Yifune really get Hebron? Hebron ir miklat avai. Hebron is enumerated amongst the Arei Miklat in the distributions to the Kohanim and Levi'im of the lands or properties in which they were to live. So if Hebron ir miklat avai, how could Kalev ben Yifune inherit that part of the land? Amar Abaye parvaha, it is the suburbs of that area. Dichtiv, because it says in Yoshua, Vetzedea ir, Vetchatzerea, Natu leKalev ben Yifune ba'achuzato. So the fields of the city, and the Chatzerot, they gave to Kalev ben Yifune as his achuzah. So we know in the Torah that the Areya Levi'im involve a city, and then Migrash, an area of 2,000 amot around the city, which includes fields and empty space. And again, that's the way that the Chazal reconciled the difference between the Elef and the Alpayim. There are other ways to deal with it, but at least we have 2,000 amot around the city. Outside of those 2,000 amot are the suburbs, and that's what Kalev ben Yifune inherited, with those suburbs that are around the area of Hebron. All right, now we move on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah begins with somewhat cryptic statement, and most of the Mishnah is not totally understandable and have to be explicated upon by the Gemara. Chara ben v'chara bat ben nachala. Males and females are equal when it comes to inheritance. Ella, Shaben notel pishnaim benichseav. The son takes a double portion in his father's inheritance. Ven notel pishnaim benichseim, but he does not take a double portion in the property of the mother. So now, the inconsistency in the Mishnah is that the Mishnah starts speaking about a son and a daughter, and then it jumps tracks and says, Ella, that the son inherits in his father's property and not his mother's property a double portion. But what does his mother's property and father's property have to do with echad ben vechad bat? That'll be the challenge of the Gemara to try to figure out how to read this Mishnah. Hababanot nizonot menichsei av. The daughters are entitled to get their mizonot from the estate of the father. Ve'enan nizonot menichseim. On the other hand, they do not have that entitlement when it comes to the property of the mother. Which is in a situation in which the father leaves a very large estate, the sons will inherit the estate, and the daughters are entitled to take mizonot out of the estate. In a situation in which he leaves a small amount in the estate, and now it's a choice between whether the boys or the girls will take mizonot from the estate, the daughters get precedence to take mizonot from the estate, and the boys, after machzir ha'ptachim, have to go knock on doors and collect in order to pay for their mizonot. That entitlement or that right to take mizonot out of the estate applies to the assets of the father because that's part of the Tnaei Ketubah. It does not apply to the assets or the Yerusha that comes through the mother. So now the Gemara asks the question that we noted. Ma echad ben ve'echad bat. What does it mean that they are equal to Nachala? Ilema diyarte ki hadodi. If you want to suggest that they're on equal footing in terms of their inheritance, hatnan. We already had the Mishnah earlier, ben kodim lebat, that the son goes before the daughter, ko yotzei yirechosho ben kodim lebat. And anybody who's a derivative or a child of that son takes precedence over the daughter. So you see that it's not that they're on equal footing, it's only when there are no sons do the daughters inherit, but when there are sons, they're not on equal footing. So how can the Mishnah make such a claim? Amar Rav Nachum Yitzchak Hachi Gamar. This is the way to read it. Echad ben ve'echad bat notnim bira'ui kemukzak. When it comes to Nachala, then the ben and the bat, both the son and the daughter, have rights to not only the property that is in possession of the bequeather, but even property that will come in the future, loans that will be repaid, they're entitled to that value. Because by Nachala, there is no restriction against it only being for things that are mukzak, for things that are ra'oi, that are on the come, also belong to those individuals. But it says, Anamitanina. We already had this in the Mishnah earlier on. Benot Slavchad natlu shlosha chalakim benachala. The Benot Slavchad took three portions in the land of Israel. Chelek aviem, the chelek of their father at Slavchad, sheyom yitzei Mitzrayim, because he himself was one who left Mitzrayim. V'chalkoim echav benichsei chefer, and the division of the property of chefer, their grandfather, amongst the brothers. The brothers being Tzlovchad's brothers, so they took their portion of their father when he inherited his father, Chefer. And we know that Tzlovchad was the Bechor, and therefore he got a double portion in Chefer's property, so that's three Chalakim. If you tell me that they get Ra'oi b'Mukhzak, that's obvious by the mere fact that the daughters of Tzlovchad got a portion in their grandfather's possession. Their grandfather was yet to be in possession of the land of Israel, and yet we still say that Benot Tzlovchad inherited it. So that shows you, even bira'oi, you would take a portion or it comes to the inheritance of the land. Now that would go against the way that we explained this Mishnah earlier on, where earlier on we explained that this Mishnah, that Eretz Yisrael is considered to be mukzeket in the hands of those that inherited it, and therefore there was no ra'oi over here, and that's why the representatives, the children of the deceased Tzlovchad, were entitled to a double portion Chefer's possessions because Tzlovchad was the Bechor. And so they step into the shoes of their father. That is the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains the proof from the Mishnah. And we noted already the problem with that. On the other hand, the Rashbam says the reason that that Mishnah is a proof is from the fact that Tzlovchad died before Chefer. And that makes the property or the possessions coming to Tzlovchad, leaving out Eretz Yisrael, to be things that are ra'oi and not necessarily mukzak. And despite that fact, the Benot Tzlovchad were able to inherit their father's rights in that property, even though Chefer had yet either to come into possession of that property or pass that property to Tzlovchad because he had yet to pass away. Now, even though we don't know who passed away first, Tzlovchad or Chefer, irrespective, the Mishnah does not differentiate. And that would indicate that either way, it would have worked that the Bnei Tzlovchad would be entitled to that property. Ba'od my Ella. In addition to that, the word Ella is a non sequitur in the Mishnah. You're speaking about Ben and Bat, and all of a sudden you jump tracks to Av Ve'Eim. Ella Amar Papa. Rather, Ben Papa offers an alternate solution. Ochik Kamar. This is what it means. Echad Ben Ve'Chad Bat Notlim Chelik BaBichora. When it comes to a son and a daughter, they both have rights to the Chelik of the Bichora. Hanami Tanino. Don't we already have this? Shaya Bechor Notel Shnei Chalakim. That's the Mishnah before. It says that the Bechor gets a double portion. And when you step into the shoes of the Bechor, you get that same double portion. whether you are a daughter like the Bnei Tzlafchad, or you are a son. Vodmai Ella. And similarly, again, the same problem is you haven't solved the issue of Ella. Even though you are speaking consistently now about one topic, which is Bechorah, nevertheless, how do you move from Ben and Bat to Av Ve'im? Amra Vashi, Ochi Kamar. This is how to read it. Echad Ben Ben Abanim, just like a son amongst sons. Echad Bat Ben Abanot, and a daughter amongst daughters. Imamar Yerash Kol Nechsai, Dvarav Kayamim. If he says to one of his children, you will inherit all of my property, his words are upheld. So now this is based on a shita that we're going to see in 1 second of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. We mentioned him earlier, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka believes that as long as you give property or distribute it to a rightful heir, then you can, quote-unquote, override the Yerusha of the Torah. It has to be done in a manner that is a gift, and it's formulated as a gift, as well as the fact that the person that you're gifting the money or the property to must be a rightful heir. So if you have multiple sons, then you can go ahead and decide, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and give all that property to one son. Even though the other sons were entitled to it, you have a right to distribute amongst your sons as you wish, and since they are the first in line of inheritors, they are the designated inheritors of this property, and therefore he can redistribute the allocations amongst those individuals. So that's what the Gemara is saying over here. One son amongst many sons, and one daughter amongst many daughters, the father can decide to give all the property to that one individual. So the Gemara says, come on, who's that position like? Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So the Gemara says, Aktani la, come on. What do you need to tell me over here, the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, when it's going to be explicit and further on? But the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Imamala Misha Ra'oi Le'Yorsho, Dvarav Kayamim. He says, or distributes the property to someone who was the rightful heir to his property, then Dvarav Kayamim. Amisha Einu Ra'oi Le'Yorsho, on the other hand, if it's to a third party, or someone like a daughter, who's not entitled to the property here, Ein dvarav kayamim. Then what he says is invalid because he's being matneh amasher katuv b'de Torah, and he doesn't have a right to do such. So maybe you say, even though the upcoming Mishnah is going to deal with Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's position, nevertheless, at least here you have a stam Mishnah like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, which will be bolster his standing in terms of the halachic psak. So now we have a stam Mishnah that follows his position. It says you have a problem, because if you think that's going to help you out in terms of the psak halacha, but that's a problem because it's stam v'achar kach machloket hi. You have a stam mishnah and then afterwards have a machloket about the same matter. The stam v'achar kach machloket in al-chala k'stam. When you have a stam mishnah, say this mishnah is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and then a machloket, the mishnah upcoming where he argues Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka with the chachamim, we would say that the lucky principle that governs over here is stam mishnah, which is ours, machloket, the upcoming mishnah, and al-chala k'stam. The al-chala is not like that stam mishnah. And so therefore, either the problem is that we do paskin like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and given that, why would you set up the situation in which you have a stam, v'achar kach machloket, because then halacha would not be like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So that makes it improbable that that is the explanation of our Mishnah. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot say over here, Tema, Nehi nami delo chashiv stam gamur, even though it's not considered to be a full stam Mishnah, mikom akom ahanihi to chashiv kirabim. In terms of way Rabbi established over here that it's like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka that elevates him to the status of being like the Rabbim. So that Rabbi Chashi, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbim, the Gabei Rabbim, V'yachol Yot, Alacha Kamoto. Therefore, the Alacha could be like him. So the Balei Tosafot would say, V'shem Agarat Fe, maybe over here it's worse, She'en Machloket B'Samuch, when the Machloket is not proximate. The Ikla Meimar, the Hader Bei Rabbi Min Estam B'Mashe Sotam. It's the difference between a Stam V'achar kach machloket, where the machloket is immediately after the stam mishnah. In that case, you make the claim, stam v'achar kach machloket, that the halacha is not like the stam mishnah necessarily, but it would still give standing to the stam, saying that Rabbi gave that as the stam opinion to give it the tokef of like Rabbim. On the other hand, when you have a stam, then achar kach machloket much further on, in that instance, you could say that it wasn't done intentionally to create a stam v'achar kach machloket, but rather it was Rabbi changing his mind or rescinding his position. Since the original Mishnah was in place already, he didn't move it. But then he brought down the machloket to show you that the halacha should not be like that position. And so therefore, that's what the weakness is over here, which is that it's a stam v'achar kach machloket, but it's a machloket that is a little further away. It's not immediately after succeeding the stam mishnah. And because of that, it could be that it's detracting from the standing of this stam mishnah over here, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, because of the fact that Rabbi might have rescinded his position by putting in a machloket afterwards and leaving the original one intact. And in addition to that, my Ella. Again, here, you still have the problem of the Ella in our Mishnah, which is the problem of being a non sequitur, which is, in the first place, we're talking about distributions to sons and daughters. And then Ella is speaking about the possessions of the father and the possessions of the mother. Ella Amar Baravashi, Hachi Kamar. This is the solution to the problem. To make it all into one statement or one issue, which is Echaraben, Becharabat Shavim Benekseim, Ubinekseav. When it comes to the son and daughter's rights in the properties of their mother and father, the same rules apply. Just like sons would take precedence over the daughters in the father's property, so too in the mother's property. Ella, Shaben Notel Pishnaim Benekseav, Eno Notel Pishnaim Benekseim. The only difference is that a son takes a double portion in the father's possession. He does not take a double portion in the mother's possession. And the other exception is the fact that the daughters take mizonot from the father and not the mother. So that's what the Ella is coming to do, to tell you that the protocols that apply to sons and daughters are equal for the father's property as they are for the mother's property, with the exception of the fact that there is a din of bechor with regards to the father's property. There is no din of bechor with regards to the mother's property. And similar, there is only a din of mizonot by the father's property and not by the mother's property. And in that way, you can read the Mishnah as being a single statement about the same topic, which is that the first statement is about the son and daughter vis-a-vis the properties of their father and mother, saying that they're completely equal, or that the dinim that govern the father's property also govern the mother's property, with the exception of the issue of Bechora and Mizonot. All right, we're going to stop here, two lines from the bottom of Kuf Chav Bet, Amud Bet.